I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Philadelphia wants to be the first U.S. city with a safe injection site where drug users can go to shoot up under supervision, use clean needles, and hopefully receive medical care, addiction treatment, and social services. Last year, 1,200 opioid addicts died in the city from overdoses. That's four times the number of homicides in 2017, up from 2016, so the crisis has become an emergency. Mayor Kenney and District Attorney Larry Krasner wrote an op-ed in the Philadelphia Inquirer saying that criminalizing opioid addiction, as was done with crack, would be a costly mistake, and what's needed is a harm reduction approach. For years, addicts have congregated in the Kensington-Port Richmond section of the city, where they shot up and lived in a sprawling tent encampment called El Campamento along the Conrail tracks. It was shut down last year, and now drug users live under bridges and in abandoned buildings in the area. The site for the injection facility has not been picked, but will most likely be where the drug addicts are. The neighborhood residents who have been on the front line of this opioid epidemic are divided over whether it will make life in their community better or worse. We have three guests who know this community and know this issue very well, joining us here in our Philadelphia studio. Christopher Moraff is a freelance journalist who covers the criminal justice system and the war on drugs. He's a contributing writer for the Daily Beast, and his byline has appeared in a number of other publications. Christopher Moraff, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
Also with us is Bishop Dionne Butts, and she's pastor at Greater Restoration Worship Cathedral. She's also a drug and alcohol addiction counselor. And Bishop Butts, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And rounding out our trio of guests is Mary Beth Appel. She's a Kensington resident, co-director of the Catholic Worker Free Clinic at the House of Grace Catholic Worker. And Mary Beth Appel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to have all three of you with us. And Christopher, if I could begin with you, why has this part of Philadelphia become what could easily be described as ground zero for this opioid epidemic? Why Kensington? Why Port Richmond?
Well, I'll start by correcting something that you said, that that's where the addicts are. Actually, people who are addicted are everywhere. They are in communities in the suburbs, all socioeconomic strata. The reason why Kensington has become an epicenter for this problem relates to the dynamics of the black market economy rather than anything about Kensington in general. There are cultural factors that involve the way drugs are transported to this country and where they're transported from, and long-established market ties and business ties in certain communities among certain ethnic groups that have sort of kept this marketplace thriving for generations. And Kensington was, I think, well situated because of the strong Latino presence, and the drug trade has come through the Caribbean, and there's been a strong Latino presence in the supply side from that end, and also in its proximity to more impoverished white communities around there, so we had a lot of users from Fishtown and Port Richmond for decades that have been going to buy their drugs there.
And does it also explain that there is the L there? There's I-95. I mean, in terms of just plain
sure.
transportation, getting in and getting out.
Logistically, it's very easy to get to and get out of. Yes.
Mary Beth, let me turn to you. You have lived in Kensington for about 25 years now. What have you observed in terms of this epidemic of addiction? Has it gotten worse? How different is it?
Well, when I first moved to Kensington, we were in the middle of the crack epidemic, and the people who were addicted to crack were arrested, were taken to jail. It broke up families. It just ripped apart the neighborhood. And I would say we started seeing younger, mainly Caucasian people coming in about 15 years ago, and it has slowly and gradually built over the years. My experience is that when people have sort of burnt their bridges with family partners or whatever their support system was, they ended up in the neighborhood because of the access to such inexpensive, pure heroin. And it's probably quadrupled in the last year.
You've seen that? You've observed that?
Yes, with a huge, huge change that I would attribute to a combination of when the railroad tracks were cleared, they also, in addition to clearing the campamento, which was mainly Hispanic and Puerto Rican men, they also cleared many trees for several blocks, like hundreds and hundreds of trees. And there were all little encampments and little places that people would travel in and out to buy, sell, and use the drugs. And at the same time, gentrification has hit our neighborhood fiercely, in that the majority of abandoned houses and vacant lots are now building sites for new row houses and townhouses. So people really have nowhere to go. So now the drug problem has gone from being more of a hidden problem to being right out on the sidewalks.
And what you're seeing on sidewalks and under bridges, I have seen pictures, photographs of what it looks like, and that's what is outside your door.
Exactly. I can see the Lehigh Bridge from my home.
And that's an important place we should talk about. Let me get you, Bishop Butts, in on the conversation. You're a drug and alcohol counselor. Help us understand what this addiction is about.
The opioid addiction is certainly different from the crack addiction. But when we look at substance use in general, we look at a number of causal factors. And one of the causal factors is genetics. There's gene variables.
A predisposition,
predisposition,
if you will.
Another one would be mental health, untreated mental health, you know, including trauma. And so when people come into our facility to receive services, we no longer look at treatment as we're going to deal with your drug addiction, but that we look at it from a harm reduction, you know, perspective, if you will, or a whole person, and we're looking at the mental health, the trauma. What happened? How did we get here? Because ultimately, if we do not get to the root of it, the cycle will continue. You know, the behavior of addiction will go on. And so we treat the person in terms of what has happened to them. And so we have also seen an increased rate of recidivism within the treatment facility as
so
it relates to
work to get off
and then they come back
again.
Right. And to be honest, when they come in, most of the treatment facilities, you for us, it's 6 months. But by the time you work through some of the undercurrent issues that they're facing, we're already in the fourth month, you know.
And then you only have 2 months.
And then we have 2 months to kind of really.
Perhaps a lifetime of.
Exactly.
Of trauma and misery and suffering. Christopher, let me go back to you. And I repeated what has been said a number of times about 1,200 addicts dying from overdoses last year. It's just a shocking number when you think about it. What kind of drug are we talking about? What kind of. And I know that you look at and test bags for things like fentanyl.
Yes, so we're talking predominantly illicitly manufactured fentanyl and a handful of fentanyl analogs, although primarily we're dealing with fentanyl HCL, the illicit fentanyl. This is more powerful than heroin. It's also more short-acting than heroin. And so I think what we're seeing in terms of the rise in the type of clustering that you were talking about with more people around. It's just the landscape has changed considerably over the past 3 years since this fentanyl has really come in and supplanted, for the most part, a large portion of the traditional heroin supply. You're finding people more connected to where they are without leaving. There's a requirement to use more often, for instance.
You just feel the need to use more often.
The half-life is just shorter. You will get sick. So we have to understand when we talk about somebody with a heroin dependency, for the most part, you're not using to get high. You're using to, what they say, get off E, right? So I'm just getting my tank filled a little bit, right? So to get well, you have to inject more often with fentanyl.
In order to feel that high. Mary Beth, let me go back to you. And I know that you have seen people overdosing and using, sitting in cars, I guess, in front of where you live. You use Narcan as well?
Right. For the first time this year, I've had to start using Narcan, and there's probably been about 6 episodes where I have had to administer Narcan and give full CPR to people outside of our clinic and on the block where I live. And prior to that, we had never seen that.
And what you literally were seeing were people just overdosing in front of your eyes.
People are overdosing and constantly walking up and down the street. We're shaking people and checking people, making sure they're alive. I do a little bit of outreach on the train underpasses, and every time I've been there, there's been someone who is on the verge of overdosing. And last year, I came home from work, and someone hit my car that was parked. And they were passed out with the needle in their arm.
Oh,
the man told us later that his foot came off the brake. He didn't even put the car in park. People buy their drugs and then park in front of the house on Lehigh, which is a real easy exit to I-95. In this past weekend, my son had to knock on a window of someone in a car shooting up, but it's constant.
It's constant. Looks like you want to add something, Bishop.
I wanted to kind of go back to what Chris shared in terms of when people use the heroin, you know, the body effect, the physical response to not having what, you know, they would need to start their day off. And so when I encounter individuals or people who does not know or understand the disease of addiction, I kind of explain it in a way that, you know, a diabetic need insulin, you know, to kind of keep moving. And that is like the same way that someone who's caught up in this heroin addiction, they can't get out the bed. You know, they can't get up. They can't move forward until they have, you know, their, what they would consider their medication. Now, we understand that there's other ways, you know, that, you know, you could get help and maintain, you know, manage without using it, but it's getting them to that place, you know. I think we need to be more sensitive. Education and awareness is very important and very key. With this opioid epidemic is very key. And that, you know, Chris mentioned the fentanyl, that's taking people out.
Sure, sure.
You know, and so they're so desperate at some point that they'll use whatever that will make them feel better and ultimately lending itself to a death sentence.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation talking with our guests about the opioid epidemic here in Philadelphia. We will be talking about the safe injection sites, or a site that has been proposed by both the mayor and the district attorney and others here in the city of Philadelphia. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about the opioid epidemic emergency here in Philadelphia and what the city wants to do about it, which is to create a safe injection facility where addicts can shoot up safely, hopefully get medical services, hopefully get even treatment. And again, talking with Mary Beth Appel, who has lived there for decades, and she is, and I'm just scrambling over here, she is a co-director of the Catholic Worker Free Clinic at the House of Grace Catholic Worker. Also with us is Bishop Dion Butts, and she is pastor at Greater Restoration Worship Cathedral. She's also a drug and alcohol addiction counselor. And Christopher Maraff, he's a freelance journalist. He covers the criminal justice system and the war on drugs and has been covering this particular epidemic in this part of Philadelphia. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. And I do want to read some comments, but Christopher, I know you wanted to say something.
I'd just like to comment on what the bishop was just speaking of regarding the physiological dependency that heroin and opioids produce. And particularly among, I think, the homeless addicted population, there's been too much of an emphasis on treatment being ending the drug use first, right? And then dealing with the ancillary supports that come with it. And in many ways, this has created a situation where you may be getting somebody off the only thing that keeps them going through the day mentally, as a self-confidence thing, while they have no job, have no home. We saw this change a bit with law enforcement assisted diversion in Seattle, where we're starting to meet people where they are. And I think supervised injection facilities could also play a role in that, where, yes, somebody is still using drugs, but while we're at it, let's see if we can get them stable housing or get them housing. It's pretty impossible to treat somebody's addiction when they're homeless, in my experience.
No, and which makes obviously a lot of sense because mm-hmm. the needs are so great. Well, let's talk about a safe injection site. And again, it hasn't been selected, but it's pretty clear that it's going to be in this neighborhood that we've been talking about. Rhea Beth, how do you feel about that?
Oh, I'm really excited about the safe injection sites. I think it's a great first step to give people a bit of dignity back. And I think now people are forced to live in an underground, horrible, undignified situation with no access to running water or restroom facilities. And I think the first step towards recovery really is getting some dignity. And I think that will really help in people being able to approach recovery.
Has this divided the community that you live in, Kensington?
That hasn't been my experience, because I see that people are very angry about the public use of drugs and angry about the numerous people living outside right in front of our eyes with no restroom facilities. That's really been a huge issue, and the trash and the needles. And so anything that can help move everything we've tried to this point hasn't worked. So we need to do something different. We need to think out of the box to make some positive changes in people's lives.
And is it an emergency from your perspective?
Absolutely an emergency.
Bishop Butts, where do you stand on this? And it's complicated. I realize it's people are divided.
Yeah, I'm in the middle, if I could be honest.
I want you to be honest.
Because I hear, you know, my sister here, you know, she's living there. She's witnessing this. She's hands-on, you know. And I can also hear, you know, the other side, where people are not educated enough, you know. They have major concern, especially as it relates to the criminalization of the crack era. So where I stand really is the bridge to kind of bring both sides together, you know, to see, because we have to do something,
right?
You know,
because the way it is now
is just not going to work. You know, I don't know really where the church stands at this point, because we're now coming into conversations about it. Right. You know, we're coming into discussions to see what can be done, what can we do as a faith-based community. And so I believe my job is to bring awareness to, you know, the development of these sites, what has happened in the past, how successful they have been, what are some of the cons to it, you know, what are some of the barriers to it, so that people can make an informed decision. But we have to do something, because if we are not part of the solution, then we continue to be a part of the problem, and we perpetuate a system that dehumanizes people, that, you know, that continues to cripple our communities. Mm-hmm. Not only does it cripple our communities socially, culturally, but also economically. You know, there are things that need to happen. We're traumatizing children walking to school. They have to walk past this. They have to live it. So we have to do something.
Well, let me turn to you, Christopher. And one of the arguments against it is that it normalizes drug addiction. The city becomes an enabler. It could attract people to the site. There's no guarantee that they're going to get treatment if they're coming in to use in a safer environment. Where do you stand on this?
Well, no, there's no guarantee anyone's going to get treatment, and there's no guarantee that once somebody gets treatment, they're going to remain heroin free. Where I stand is that helping people stay alive is not the same as enabling drug use. We're talking about a public health emergency here. People are dying in our streets. People are defecating in our streets because they have nowhere to go. There are needles on people's steps. I see them daily. Women coming out from gated plate, you know, front doors to sweep the syringes off their steps. So I think that that is a that's kind of a red herring. People are already using drugs. I think it's highly unlikely that somebody is going to say to themselves, "Hey, look, there's a supervised injection facility. I think I'm going to start shooting heroin today." We're not enabling drug use. We are mitigating fatality.
Well, and I think part of the question is, and perhaps I can put this to you, Mary Beth, which is based even on your conversations with some of the addicts that you see in your neighborhood, will they come? Do they know about it? Has the city done enough to say, this is coming, we are here to help you with your addiction?
That has been a concern of mine as well, and I think that people are very isolated, particularly people living under the bridges, but I have gone under there a number of times and talked to many of our patients who do feel that there's just so few options for them. And I think theoretically they're very excited about them. I think actually getting from point A to point B is a little more challenging. And I think the key thing is that it's in a place that people have trusted relationships with the people running the site. I think if it's done in a hospital, there will probably be very poor attendance. I think it needs to be a community-based site. And I think, like all of our programs in the area, it takes a while to build up trust and relationship. I think that's really essential.
Do you think they will trust it if it comes from the mayor, the district attorney? Now, we know that the federal attorneys are opposed to this. The attorney general in Pennsylvania is opposed to this as well. Do you think they'll feel safe enough to come?
I was more speaking to the comfort of the people that are managing the sites themselves.
So
of course, there's distrust of the political system.
Sure. And I know, Christopher, you want to add something, then we'll get some callers.
I'd like to clear something up. This is not coming from the city. This is not coming from the district attorney. They have said they are mainly hands-off here. They have taken a position that, if I may express my opinion, is not involved enough. It's
coming from the mayor and the district.
They have said, in so many words, go at it. We're not going to support you. You're not going to get money from us. The DA had already said he's not going to prosecute people that do this. So it's hard to see how it really the mayor's input was anything more than just kind of window dressing on this. It's not clear yet who's going to even supply the legal counsel should it be required. Mm-hmm. In Seattle, we have the King County prosecuting attorney who has gone on record as saying, I look forward to the day I get Jeff Sessions in court to fight this. It's not, we do not,
you think
as
that's
yet,
what's need? Do you think that's what's needed in Philadelphia?
Well, I just want to clear up that when you say, will they trust Mayor Kenney, will they trust D.A. Krasner to do, they won't be doing this.
No, I understand
a nonprofit
that. But
will be
they
doing
have
it
said,
with no money from the city.
Right, but they have said, we want this to happen. We want a green light. We do not want to do with this what we did with crack cocaine,
That is true that they have said that. And the D.A. has certainly taken a strong lead on this position in agreeing not to prosecute people that do this. It's still questionable how much the city will be involved in a defense of this, should that be required.
I hear you. Let me get John from Philadelphia to join us. And John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
My wife is a chronic pain patient who takes Varix.
John, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so my wife's a chronic pain patient who takes various opiate medications for treatment of her genetic condition. And she's very active in the pain advocacy community. And the issue that they've had is really access to legal medication. So in 2016, the CDC issued a new series of opiate prescribing guidelines that greatly restricted what doctors are suggested to prescribe. And in a lot of cases, those guidelines were interpreted as, oh, the DEA is going to come after me if I continue writing prescriptions for my patients, and treatment was just basically eliminated.
Well, you know, John, I hate to jump in here only because we're focusing really on this part of Philadelphia where there are so many people who are abusing these drugs. And I understand the point that you're raising, which is, you know, how do we then deal with how much pain medication we give to a specific patient and will they get addicted or not? And in many ways, I think that's slightly outside of our conversation, but it looks like Bishop Butts wants to respond. Go ahead.
That is one of the causal factors of substance use. As well.
The proliferation of these drugs?
Because the first, when he said pain medication, you know, in quotes, there's no, you're not going to have painkillers. The pain is not going to go away. The medication is prescribed for you to manage the pain. Then it requires a person to continue to rely on that medication, which then can lend itself to an addiction. And so one of the major places that many people find themselves in substance use is from taking medication from like the dentist or doctors if you're having severe body aches or what have you. So it does lend itself to that. But again, because that's not the spectrum in which mm-hmm. we're kind of covering today, I just wanted to share with him that, you know, you have to begin to, you know, assess what your body can take and then begin to back away from that.
And hopefully get the kind of treatment
that you really need.
That you absolutely mm-hmm. need. Let me read some comments here. One from Annabelle. This is about safe injection sites. If it means they seek help and stop using, then go for it. It would be nice to walk around and not see people dozing off while standing up or hunched over in a stupor. And if I can go back to you, Mary Beth, which is, if a safe injection site essentially is a place where addicts can go to use their drugs safely, but does not provide more than that, is that something that you would support?
I totally would mainly support a comprehensive site with giving people access to treatment, whether it be medication-assisted treatment or detox and rehab. I think the next step is really essential that would involve housing and involve longer-term programs, which are extremely difficult to find right now.
And would you agree with that, Christopher?
Yes, I
Which
believe
is,
it should be
what
a comprehensive.
Should these sites, yeah, how comprehensive
the goal should
these
be to save lives, and nothing more, nothing less. I mean, if we save lives and overdoses decline by 300, would you know, or go back to where they were, let's say, I would call the pilot a success. As a matter of course, you're going to be engaging people on a daily basis in a range of social services. I would expect to see more people entering treatment. I would not use that as the gauge of a success of one of these facilities, however. And I would just like to add on the pain front, I have immense empathy for people that have legitimately been, their pain medications have been reduced. Many people are suffering. This is a real issue. This is not the forum, but I would just recommend that you Google some of my work on this. It's something we should be thinking about.
Fair enough. And certainly something we have actually talked about on Radio Times before. Here's a comment from Kate. On some level, this feels a bit like handing out condoms at school. People will be against it, but the behavior is going to happen regardless of whether you close your eyes or stick your fingers in your ears. So we might as well help the situation out. What do you think of that, Bishop Butter?
I think that's a good comment. Can I just give some benefits
Please do this?
Because when we talk about harm reduction, that's really what we're talking about with supervised injection facilities. The benefits would reduce the risky behavior of transmitting communicable diseases, HIV, hepatitis C, and hep B. You know, that it's not enough at this point just to give out safe, you know, needle exchanges and condoms and all of that, but coupled with comprehensive treatment, medical physicians there, therapists, counselors. Unfortunately, the housing market is appears to be crashing today, so that's a barrier also to treatment. However, bringing people in and looking at ways that we can establish contact and safe contact and consistent contact with the population that we're talking about, mm-hmm. because right now we don't know how many people are out there that are really infected with the virus and hepatitis C and hepatitis B, but by providing some comprehensive services, we can help, we can reduce that number. Again, as Chris and Mary Beth said, we can reduce the overdose rate. There has been success in other places. Like, this goes back to literally New Zealand, Canada. There are countries that have been doing this for many, many years, and so we are new to this. So we just have to kind of get educated and bring people to the forefront about what's happening.
And we're almost on a break here. Christopher, can you respond to that? I mean, certainly there are other countries, other cities that are trying to do some version of this.
Yes, I mean, and the data from more than 100 peer-reviewed reports has shown this to be an immense success. We recently had a short report come out even on an unsanctioned facility that's happening in America right now that has not seen a single overdose. We are hamstrung by our federal drug laws. If sex workers were dying at the rate of drug users, states could do open houses of prostitution without the fear of federal interference. Federal drug laws are unique in that realm, that we have this federal criminal interference in state business and state health, public health. So that's the big elephant in the room.
And just to underscore what you just said, 1,200 people dying last year in Philadelphia.
Almost. Which is at least threefold what it was prior to that.
Exactly. Hold on to your thought, only because we have to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about the opioid epidemic here in Philadelphia, and in many ways it's created a crisis in a number of communities, including the one we're talking about, Kensington. Talking with Christopher Moraff, he's a freelance journalist, has been covering this epidemic in Philadelphia. Pastor Dion Butts, a drug and alcohol counselor, and Mary Beth Appel, who has been working in this region as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, talking about what can be done to deal with the opioid crisis in the city of Philadelphia. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Ben from Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Ben. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure,
my name is Dr. Ben Cochiara. I'm a family medicine resident at the University of Pennsylvania, and I work also at Prevention Point.
Sure.
I'd like to make just a couple of points that have to do with the evidence behind safe injection facilities. The nice thing about doing harm reduction work in the United States is that we're 30 years behind every other civilized country when it comes to doing these sorts of interventions. So we have three decades of solid evidence to point us in the right direction here. When Vancouver opened their safe injection facility in 2003, they saw that in the first year, it increased users' likelihoods of getting into treatment by about 30%. On top of that, about half of the people who visited the site accessed some form of drug treatment, and about a quarter of them, by the end of a year, were abstinent from drugs. So this is a really effective intervention at getting people the treatment that they need. But as Chris and as Mary Beth and as Bishop Butts all point out, that absent a comprehensive network of social services to address homelessness and mental illness, this is an intervention that can only address one of the two epidemics that we're suffering from. We have an overdose epidemic that's killing 60,000 people a year, and we have an opioid epidemic that is affecting many, many millions more people. So this is only a piece of an integrated, comprehensive approach that has to address homelessness, mental illness, and also community trauma.
Sure.
There are zip codes in Philadelphia where over half of the people who are living there have experienced and have been exposed to violence, poverty, abuse. And when a human being is exposed to that kind of trauma, it rewires their brain. It makes it difficult to adapt and cope with stress. And it actually explains something on the order of 70% of injection drug use. So I want a safe injection facility, but I also want this to be part of a larger discussion that has to do with a comprehensive approach to both of our epidemics. If we don't do that, we're going to be right back on this program in a year.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You pulled together a number of strands that we've been talking about. I'm looking at Mary Beth, and I guess the question is, it's been hanging over our conversation, which is, you can deal with a piece of this crisis, this emergency, but how do you get to the larger whole?
Oh, that's so challenging.
It sure is.
Often it all starts with poverty and the homelessness issue, and there's just so few affordable housing places. There's so few long-term treatments. Pathways to housing is one example that does a comprehensive program that gives people apartments first with their drug and alcohol and mental health treatment as part of that. And there's the waiting list for those programs are just years long.
Since you live very close to one of these bridges, or I guess bridge underpass, where two of them, where people are living, how do they live? And I'm thinking of that bitter cold week we had back in January.
Right.
How do people survive that?
People, it's unclear to me. I've seen for the first time after 25 plus years of being in this work of several people losing body parts to frostbite this winter for the first time. There seem to be many Good Samaritan-type folks who are bringing tents and mattresses and blankets and those sort of things to kind of help people survive the cold. But we've tried to help people get into shelters, but the access to shelter is actually quite limited, and the shelters that people feel comfortable going to are filled up immediately. But I don't know how people survived.
Yeah. And that was just such a difficult week. To you, Christopher, I mean, I guess the question is, what would be success? I mean, from your perspective, if the safe injection site is a go and people use it, is success the fact that instead of 1,200 people dying, it would be more like 2016 when, 900 people died?
I mean, ideally, we could get it back to before fentanyl hit the...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when it was in the 300s, but I mean... The situation right now under the bridges is devastating. It's unlike anything I've seen in this community. We have marginalized a population of people that was already marginalized even more, and are forcing them to live in filth. And now, to be fair, humans are humans, and people do take care of. There are people that take the initiative to clean up, and in some way, there are small clusters of like organization that pop up out of chaos. I mean, not to get too much into the context, but when we closed El Campamento,
along the Conrail tracks, yeah,
right, which was for all intents and purposes a working, non-sanctioned sort of crowdsourced injection facility. And I say that in the loosest way because it was run strictly by users and dealers. But there was a sort of hierarchy that kept that thing working that is lacking from where people are now. To me, success is we get people housing and we get people stop dying. Opioid use does not... death is not a natural or necessary side effect of opioid use. Opioids are used every day in all kinds of ways, even fentanyl. You do not have to die from it. So I suppose that would be my first measure of success. Let's start there.
Where are the drugs coming from? Is there a simple answer to that?
It depends
everywhere?
On who you ask. Largely, I believe that they are coming from now cartels in the western portion of Mexico that are fighting for supremacy over precursors from China and transit routes to America. To a lesser extent, we're getting analogs and purer forms of fentanyl in the mail from China. But in the capacity, like 100 or 80 kilos that was just seized recently around San Diego, that kind of stuff is coming from Mexico.
Coming up 95, for instance?
Through Atlanta primarily.
Let me get Yael from Philadelphia to join us. Yael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Yael, you're on the air.
Hello? Yep. Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Go ahead.
How's everybody doing? So my thing is, like, these communities, I'm all for, like, safe injection sites, and because... And I've seen firsthand what Harold does to people. It's a physical, you know what I mean? Their body demands it. And it's really bad. It's really bad to see people when they're sick. But my thing is, why can't people get treatment or safe injection sites where they live. Because if you go to Kensington, the majority of the of users up in that VL, they're not from Philadelphia. And they're specifically not from Kensington. So, you know, why can't we help these people where they live, where they're coming from?
Well, that's a great question. I also saw on the computer here that you were concerned about the safety of children, and certainly children are involved. And Bishop Butts, you want to respond to this, especially the children part.
You see, we understand that substance use disorder does not, it has no discrimination. You know, it's and I said this to a friend of mine. I guarantee you that there's someone in the White House, there's someone in the church house, there's someone in the hospital, you know, on down to Kensington, that is struggling with this opioid addiction. Part of the reason why people move from their homes and come into a place to use, again, is because it's almost like, you know, if you have a child with who lives with a single parent and the parent is always working, they're going to go to the person or the people that they feel safe with, you know, that they have a common ground with. And so that's part of what we see as well. The second piece in terms of children. Children who are exposed to opioids while in utero, their lifespan is very short for some of them, if they even survive. And, you know, I wish we had enough time to talk about ACEs, because which is adverse childhood effects of what we see, the trauma and all that, and how it affects them as they grow, is also a contributing factor to substance use disorder. I agree with my companions here today. It's that we need to find a safer way, a successful way of addressing this, the family as a whole, because opioid is not the person, it's the disease. And that's and we need to pull the stigma off of that. You know, I am not the opioid, it's the disease. It's something that I wrestle with, and that we have to address it as a whole. And addressing it as a whole is finding ways that children can get to school safely, finding places that they can play again without falling over and the possibility of getting stuck with a needle. And so the children are definitely affected by that. But there are ways that we can help.
Mary Beth, when our caller said that most people are from outside of this part of Philadelphia, you said that's true.
Yes, mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. People are from the suburbs or from upstate Pennsylvania. Many are from New Jersey.
And you know that from talking with them?
From talking with people and asking them, oh, could you go around the corner? And they're unfamiliar with the street names. They're totally new. Even getting on the L is sometimes out of people's experience. And I believe that the safe injection site should be in every county, and I'm hoping that New Jersey as well would take on the sites. But I think because of the overwhelming amount of pure, cheap heroin and fentanyl in this neighborhood, it is an obvious place to put a site.
Yeah. You want to add something, Christopher?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to push back a little bit on a couple of myths, that one being that this is now newly a white thing, when in fact there have been white heroin users in Kensington. We had a strong Irish population right on the east side of Kensington Avenue, Fishtown, Port Richmond. These people have been getting addicted for years. This is maybe socioeconomically a different problem, not necessarily racially in Philadelphia. Also, the idea that Philadelphia is some sort of Las Vegas for the, you know, heroin. Yes, people come from outside the immediate area. People come from the counties. But there's lots of people from around the neighborhood. There's lots of Latinos that are still using near Gurney Street that are not even anywhere near the bridges. And lastly, I'd like to, and since Camden cracked down on its heroin market, we're getting a push of people into Philly.
Interesting.
And lastly, I'd like to crack down on this idea that there are, like, dealers preying on users and users on the other side. For the large majority of street corner hustlers, they are users as well. And many of them are working to feed their own habits.
And so there's not, as you say, not users over here, dealers over there. It's all part of the same mix. Then we read an email from Robert. He says, even though safe injection sites may improve outcomes, many people do not want any drug use in their neighborhoods. Many in Kensington, Port Richmond are low-income homeowners who cannot afford to leave their neighborhood. Would people be so open to these sites if they were in Center City or Fairmount or Chestnut Hill? I'm tossing this back to you, Mary Beth, because it looks like if there is one, it will probably be in this part of Philadelphia we have been talking about. But you mentioned the fact that they need to be in other parts of the city and probably the state.
Absolutely.
And just because that's where the people are, the addicts are.
I believe the problems are all over, and we're just seeing people who come as sort of the last step, the last stop.
Let me read a couple of more emails. One from Dennis. What role did nurses and medical professionals play at safe sites? As a nurse, I would be concerned that someone may overdose on my watch. And I'm assuming with a safe injection site, people are trained. I'm looking at you, Christopher, because you know a lot about these sites, certainly in other parts of the world, that these people are trained to deal with people who are using drugs or misusing drugs, addicted to drugs.
Yes, and I mean, I've seen untrained people reverse overdoses with Narcan. So there should not be a fatality. If there was, it would likely be complicated by other factors. There's no guarantees against anything, right. But we're not talking about open heart surgery here.
Right. And you have used Narcan, right?
Right. And I'm a nurse practitioner. And yes, there would be medical personnel supervising the sites.
Have you used Narcan as well?
Yes, and I have two in my pocketbook.
Do you? And were you trained? I mean, are people trained to do that?
So my outreach ministry, which is Compassionate Hearts, we provide harm reduction training, awareness and training, and we bring in med students from Drexel to do the training on Narcan.
Mm-hmm. And we know about the librarian who also used Narcan. Go ahead, Mary Beth.
Prevention Point in Philadelphia, that's right on Kensington Avenue, has done a fabulous job of offering free training for Narcan for anyone in the neighborhood, any neighbor, anyone who's addicted. So what we're seeing is people who are using the drugs with their friends or acquaintances and using the Narcan on each other, which has been a huge positive impact.
Oh, interesting. We're almost out of time here. And you mentioned, Christopher, that this isn't coming directly from the city. The city is essentially giving it a green light. Do we know who would run a facility like this?
There's a collection of medical students, harm reduction advocates on the ground that are working right now to build a coalition. I believe they have 15 organizations, including your own, involved in the area. They're building support. They're looking for funding. And then what we do not know now is where the city is going to stand. Where does Commissioner Ross stand? What is he going to instruct his officers? We could have a place open tomorrow, potentially, if the money and the staff was there.
I'm giving you the last word. You've got 20 seconds.
Okay. Chris mentioned there's a coalition on the ground, Soul Collective, Prevention Point, Angels in Motion, St. Francis, and other organizations who have come together to provide, harm reduction training and all of that good stuff. But if someone who has a woman or mother who has her child with her, there's facilities like RHD Family House Now, which is located in Philadelphia, that provide treatment for the whole comprehensive treatment for mom and her baby to come in and see, about getting treatment.
Well, I appreciate all three of you joining us today on Radio Times. We could have gone on so much to talk about. That's Bishop Dion Butts. She is a pastor at the Greater Restoration Worship Cathedral, also a drug and addiction counselor, and nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Also with us, Mary Beth Appel, and she's a Kensington resident, co-director of the Catholic Worker Free Clinic at the House of Grace Catholic Worker, and nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
And rounding out our trio of guests, Christopher Moraff, he's a freelance journalist who's been covering the criminal justice system and the war on drugs. Christopher, nice to have you with us on Radio
Times. Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.